I'd like to welcome Jason Squire back. He has done a podcast earlier this year with us. Jason, welcome back.
Oh, thanks. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Jason is a professor at the USC School of Cinematic Arts and also the editor of the movie business book, Fourth Edition. And what we wanted to do today is we wanted to get your perspective and your prediction for the entertainment industry in 2019. So, Jason, what do you think is going to happen next year?
Well, let's break it down, and thank you so much. The first, we can say first is theatrical, perhaps in which there is a big sea change, because there will be more transition from AT&T's ownership of Warner Brothers. They're still in the throes of transitioning, and there are announcements every now and then, and that goes hand in hand with the other big studio acquisition that was unexpected, the completion of Disney's acquisition of Fox, with its inevitable restructuring internally and the pain that comes with it. So in a nutshell, deal makers will be adjusting to one less theatrical buyer. Now, this will also be more than made up, in my opinion, by major commitments from streaming services, which brings us to the TV and streaming arena of entertainment that's so exciting these days. So turning to TV and streaming, the biggest story is Disney Plus. They finally named their direct-to-consumer streaming service that they will be introducing in the fourth quarter, they say, of 2019. The question remains for customers is, at what price point? And there's a similar related story where AT&T's Warner Media, the newly named enterprise of media at Warner Media is also gearing up to compete in its own over-the-top streaming service, again, at what price point and when, which begs the question, which studio brand may be next? Will Paramount do it? Will Universal? Will they stand back and watch the others adjust to a brand new marketplace? It'll be fascinating to see to what extent subscribers will flock to either or both of the Disney and Warner proposed streaming services.
Jason, if you were just to go back, do you anticipate the price point to be less than the existing Netflix, and perhaps other competitors, or could it be potentially at the same level?
Sure. Netflix certainly is the bar. Question is, as you say, will it be at the same level, higher or lower? So the Disney history is always to price things higher. Anyone who has been to Disneyland is well aware, but in this case, isn't it competitive to try to undercut the competition and perhaps have a monthly subscriber rate that starts at the Netflix level or lower? So that's a really good question. Often, of course, companies start at a certain price point and then, as Hulu has done and Netflix has done, differentiate into value-added higher price points that offer expanded opportunities for the consumer.
Right, and the bigger question now is, with all of these new entrants into the streaming or the SVOD market, how could that potentially impact the big three, which would be Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu? Could there be a perhaps reduced rate of growth of subscribers? Could it be simply increasing the pie, whereby more people will flock into the streaming services, but not necessarily impact the existing service providers?
Good question. It comes down to, in my opinion, which of the Netflix subscribers will be adding Disney Plus and or Warner Media's service. So that's an open question. but it seems that anyone who is settled in Netflix and using streaming as their access to content will simply want to expand on that and take the financial responsibility. And then it's up to the platforms to deliver in terms of content. This will also impact current Netflix and Hulu, because one of the issues of Netflix this year and also last year is the enormous amount of content globally. We can just focus on North America. Original content. I mean, that's a very big step that Netflix was a pioneer on in the streaming services, and simply went through the roof in terms of gaining the subscriber base, which is, of course, always their goal, but also affording new opportunities to talents, both established and new. So when you see all of the new programming, limited series and movie, original content coming out of Netflix, you wonder whether there will be a leveling off of the numbers of new content. Can you really sustain them? Or, in a very smart move that started at the traditional networks and went on to HBO, the limited series is a great way to have major talent coming in and out of the arena whenever they want, and not have the 24-week, 22-week commitment of traditional television series. So just to emphasize that, you wonder to the extent a Netflix, for example, is going to be launching new original content at the same rate as they have in 2018. And I wonder, I really feel that they'll be leveling off.
One follow-up question, however. The big giant, also known as Apple, regardless of the fact that they're under current strain, if you look at the stock market, they dropped from the height of $250 a share down to $170, I think, roughly right now. But they may also be looking at getting into the game of streaming as well. Yeah. I don't know if you see any impact this coming year from Apple, or are they going to continue to slowly move into this space?
Well, they've made some really interesting announcements. My sense is the more the merrier in this space. This is the such a fascinating area of the expansion of media, and it is a win-win both for customers and for talent. The more opportunities you have on both sides of that equation, the better for the industry. It's as Apple, as a new player, has announced huge investments that they are imparting on. They're starting them now, and they're going to ramp up. And it's always going to be subject to the creative decisions of management. That's always the intangible key to any new kind of content being introduced, because truth about streaming and theatrical, nobody has to watch. I mean, yes, if you're a subscriber, you are you're first there to have the opportunity to watch, but there's no obligation, just like in back in the day, you know, broadcast television. There's no obligation. You have to be seduced by the content and the talent in order to set aside time to watch all this new content. And Apple they looked around and they said, well, this is an area that we want to compete in. And it is a wake-up call often for a media enterprise to decide to go into content, having never done original content before. When Netflix started, they acquired House of Cards. They didn't develop it internally. It's from media rights capital. They are now spending, you know, another $100 million to keep Friends, I think, is the last offer. And so Apple will be in that arena as a new competitor. And that competition is always good in this market. There are a couple of beats on interactive. Should I turn to that?
Absolutely.
Well, here's the thing about interactive. The just explosion of esports in the United States. And this is something that really started in Korea, South Korea, and built in other Asian markets with a very young contingent being devoted to esports. It's a fixture in the major Asian markets now and will continue to grow, in my opinion, in Western markets, especially North America. There have been journalism recently on scholarships being offered in college majors, like we have at School of Cinematic Arts, on interactive as a major. There are competitions that fill stadiums of fans and websites, of course, that follow this kind of sporting activity. That's the latest new invention of the of sports as part of entertainment. So that's going to continue to grow. There's also a beat on augmented reality and virtual reality. So we can't really close a discussion like this without mentioning. Is that okay?
Absolutely, yeah.
That between the two, augmented reality seems to be the most impactful and will continue to be the most impactful in areas such as medicine, science, retail, military, law enforcement, and entertainment. The experiments, however, in virtual reality and the gear that goes with it, and that's one of the big differentiations, that it's really expensive to be a player in virtual reality, even though the headset costs are going down. But it seems that the pace of development has sort of leveled off because just taking the entertainment arena for a moment, people who are at the cutting edge of this are still searching for an application to monetize the virtual reality experience. And although it's a very exciting area, there is so much experimentation going on in search of the gold ring of actually monetizing.
If I may just go back for one follow-up. With respect to the theatrical distribution, I wanted to see whether you have any opinion in terms of continued growth in China, considering the political climate we're in, considering the slowdown of overall of the Chinese economy. Do you see any change there? Or perhaps maybe it's the opposite, where the Chinese government might potentially even open up for more distribution of American films. I'm just trying to get a sense of what do you think the Chinese theatrical market might look like next year? Would it be the same? Will it shrink? Will it grow?
Well, my sense is that China is just the last of the great movie markets. And we're sort of lucky to be around to follow this explosion in the last 15 years. Customers, movie theater construction, and local language production, all of which converge to create a really extraordinary, vivid, lively market that is very, very healthy. This is for local language movies. The question becomes, and in my opinion, in the local language movie arena, it's just getting started, because there's a high percentage of newly middle class Chinese residents in the so-called second and third tier cities. By North American standards, they are huge cities. By China standards, they're smaller than the big four or five. They have tens of millions of population. Beijing and Shanghai, for example. So the key to those further markets, as the industry continues to grow in beyond the first-tier cities to second and third, is movie theater growth, construction of movie theaters, which in my opinion, which will continue at a strong pace, and the result will be higher grosses for local language movies. So at some point, and this has been a prediction of many for several years, China will overtake North America as the primary grossing market for movies. We turn to English language movies, and my sense is that the level of movies that are allowed to be shown in China will maintain at, what is it now, something like 34, though thereabouts. Those non-local language movies that have no financing involved from Chinese entities, studio movies, for instance, there may be over time permission to ramp that up by a very small number. But as you know, of course, there's a lot of trade tension at the moment between North America and especially United States and China. And the government has been really vigilant in terms of to what extent American involvement in many industries in China will be continuing.
Thank you. Any final thoughts before we close?
Well, I think everybody should go to the movies this holiday season. It's going to be a lot to see. Gosh, it's just great.
Good point. Good advice. Thank you so much, Jason, for spending a little bit of time with us with your thoughts as to...
Oh, it's great fun, Ilan. Thank you. Thank you so very much. It's been great fun.